Good morning. As you can probably tell pretty quickly by my accent, I'm not from Belgium. I originally from the UK. My job title, as Christoph just said, is storyteller. I gave myself this. It's amazing at Microsoft. You can pretty much give yourself any job title. You just put it into the directory, and somebody presses approve, and before you know it, you have a job title. So, Fortune magazine recently said my job title was a wacky job title. It's unusual. I don't know if it's wacky. But anyway, I've been with Microsoft for about 13 years, always in the UK and in Europe. The last job I did was spend a lot of time in Europe working on our cloud strategy, on products like Azure, things like that, which hopefully some of you are familiar with. But 6 months ago, I moved to our headquarters in Seattle, in Redmond, to take on a job which, for me, is it feels a lot like a hobby. I get to spend most of my days now going around Microsoft's different offices on our campus. We have about 30,000 people in Redmond who are building software, everything from Zune software to Xbox to Azure, Windows, Office, everything. But we also have a lot of laboratories who are researchers who are looking at what is the kind of what's the future for technology. And I have the pleasure of going around and meeting with lots of those folks, talking to them about where technology is going in the future, and then writing about it on a website that we launched a couple of months ago. So you may be able to see a URL up here, microsoft.com/next is where I kind of write about this work. And the topic I wanted to talk about today is how there's a real focus in Microsoft at the moment around something we call NUI, Natural User Interfaces, which hopefully some of you are familiar with. But I want to give you a bit more insight over the next, hopefully, kind of 45 minutes, and then hopefully we'll have some time for questions. A bit more insight into where we think natural user interfaces are going, what the direction is. So why don't we get started? So I spend a lot of my time going around meeting with, like I say, different folks in the company and trying to establish what are some of the technology trends that are going to inform not just Microsoft, but the kind of the industry that we work in for technology over the coming years. And Microsoft is, for good or bad, we're a company that works in lots of different areas. So we have our business stretches across a search business, an entertainment business, a gaming business, a music business, a hardware business, a cloud business, a developer tools business, a search engine business, an operating system business, a productivity software business. So we look across a very wide variety of trends in technology. And I spend time with a lot of the teams in Redmond, and these are probably, I would say, the sort of the seven areas where there's a lot of focus and energy in Microsoft at the moment. This is not just a set of Microsoft trends. These are the trends that when we look externally, the things that we think are really going to inform the direction of computing and the technology landscape over the next probably 5 to 10 years. Some of this is obviously very active already. Things like social networks, you know, it's a trend that is very much in full flow. But I think there's also an observation I would make is I think lots of people think we're done with social networks. That's it. We've got Facebook. There's 500 million people on Facebook. Social networking is complete. There is no more to come from social networking. And we think it's very much the early days of social network, and we think we'll start to see social networks and social technology built more and more into products rather than having to go to a destination like Facebook or go to an application like Facebook on your device. We think that we'll see that more and more integrated just entirely across how we use software, not just on a phone, not just on a PC, but also on things like gaming consoles, things like television. You know, social will really just become an ingredient of all of software is what we believe. Location is obviously a very big topic with things like Foursquare. But location and the sensing of location and how you can take location-based information and start to use that to create more intelligent applications and more intelligent software, we think is going to be an increasingly big trend. But also just more broadly, the trend of sensors, this so-called Internet of Things. We have so many more devices connected to the Internet these days, which is creating a huge amount of data, whether that's GPS systems or heating systems or lighting systems or accelerometers that are in our mobile phones that tell us which way up the world is at the moment. All of these devices are now connected to the Internet and creating a huge amount of potential to build more natural interfaces, which I'll come on and talk about. Pervasive displays, I was literally, just as folks were coming in, I was busy writing a post that's just about to go up onto microsoft.com/next this afternoon, which is a video that shows some of the work that's going on in Microsoft around creating next generation displays. We'll be at the point in the future where a display will no longer be, we'll no longer think about it as a 22-inch or 24-inch monitor or a 42 or a 52-inch screen. We think over time, displays will be something that you'll buy from a hardware store. You'll buy it in the same way that you buy wallpaper, and you'll just hang it on the wall as a piece of digital canvas that you can display anything on. We're not that far away from that type of technology. Clearly, computing power and storage continues to just move on at a pace from things like screens, but also memory, the performance of chips. Unfortunately, battery power isn't moving on as quickly as we'd like. Cloud computing is an enormous topic. I spent the last 2 years of my life at Microsoft working on cloud, and that is something that has really dramatically changed Microsoft's business. So we're moving pretty much every product in the company to have some element of cloud. Clearly, ubiquitous connectivity. I think moving to the US for me has been an interesting learning. Everybody in the US seems to think the rest of the world has ubiquitous broadband, high-speed connectivity, and you don't have to travel very far, you know, in the outer reaches of kind of even in Europe, and you start to find that that so-called ubiquitous connectivity doesn't really exist. So we still think there's a long way to go in terms of getting to high-speed ubiquitous connectivity. But I've left natural user interface to the last here. This is the topic I'd like to concentrate on for probably the next 30 minutes or so and just give you an insight into what we think natural user interfaces are, where we think they're going, and why we think natural user interfaces are much more than just touch and gesture. At the moment, there's a huge amount of focus around touch, obviously with things like the iPad, things like Windows Phone, or a number of touch devices on the market. There's a real kind of focus around how do you create great touch-based experiences. And then with Kinect, we've seen the enthusiasm around that over the last 60 or 70 days with gesture-based interfaces. And we love Kinect. We think there's a huge amount of potential for Kinect beyond gaming. But natural user interfaces go way beyond just touch and gesture. They go beyond speech. We start to get into the realm of context. How do you understand what a person is about to do? How do you take historical information about where a person has been in the physical world and in the digital world and start to use that to create much more intelligent interfaces that start to adapt to how we work and what we're trying to do? So I'll spend the next 30 minutes or so talking around natural user interface. I'll give you a non-technology example, if you like. Hopefully everybody can see this image and has a sense of what it is. Everybody's kind of familiar with this, right? My wife wishes I was more familiar with this. This is a control from a washing machine, clothes washer. And you take a look at that control. So probably most of us have seen a control like this, right? You go in and you take, and what is all of this stuff? Do I really need all of that information? Or should I be able to have something that's a bit more like this? And that's kind of what we mean by natural user interfaces. For years and years, we've built technology that really puts the burden of the learning onto us as the user. I think we've almost celebrated the fact as an industry, as a set of technologists, that making interfaces complex is a good thing because it means people have to learn and understand and invest time in our stuff. But we're now at the point where technology has the capability to be much more intelligent on our behalf, to start to remove some of those decisions. The reality is, you could easily put a sensor inside of a washing machine that when I put my clothes in, it can figure out pretty quickly, are these dark clothes or light clothes? And that's probably all I need as a guy, frankly. I don't need this thing. This is just too confusing, too many options. The machine knows how to wash clothes far better than I do. Technology knows how to do things far better than I do. So this is kind of a very trivial example of, I think, the world we can move towards, where technology can start to act on our behalf, make decisions on our behalf, make more intelligent decisions on our behalf, based on a set of whether it's sensors that can gather that information, or previous things that we've done, our history, our browsing history, whatever it may be. We can start to use technology in much more intelligent ways to make those decisions for us. So if you think about the progression of where we've come from user interfaces, this is just a kind of quick history lesson in a way. This is very much kind of Microsoft's history lesson of where we started back in DOS between 81 and 95, and then we've accelerated on through the graphical user interface. And then obviously interface development has taken on, as you guys will know better than me, a huge amount of significance as we moved into the web world. And then we've moved into this world of location-based applications and social networks helping to drive the interface. But now we believe we are at the point, technology is at the point where we can start to build these more anticipatory, I'll explain what that means in a moment, how we can have technology anticipate what we're about to do. And this is kind of one of the pieces of technology, or a good example of one of the pieces of technology that's going to enable this. So hopefully most of you guys are familiar with Kinect. Somebody's going to be clearly more familiar with Kinect at some point later in the day. I'm assuming that's what this here is for. It's not a gift for me. Fortunately, I have one at home. But I'm not here to kind of give you a sales pitch or a lesson on Kinect. I think the more interesting thing about this slide you can take away from Kinect is we're now starting to give technology the same senses that humans have. So technology can now, not only can it see, it can recognize us. When you walk into the room and you wave at Kinect, it recognizes me as distinctly different from my wife or my child because it has facial recognition software built in. And I'll explain a little bit where else that is in our technology stack later on. When I walk in and I talk to Kinect, Kinect recognizes my voice. It's early days in that side of things, but there's a lot more that we can do there. But if you think about my earlier comments around interfaces being about touch and speech and gesture, we're now starting to have technology that has some of the same human senses that we have. The ability to see and recognize, the ability to hear, and increasingly the ability to understand who we are and what we're trying to do. I'll show you in a moment some of the very simple examples, the early days of the work we're doing around Bing. Started to try and change Bing from being a search engine that delivers 10 blue results to being a search engine that can anticipate what you're about to do, what you're trying to do. If you think about it, the technology is here to do lots of this stuff already today. This room, for example, all of our technology, your PCs, your phones, whatever technology you have with you, your technology probably knows you're in this room, because your meeting is in your calendar. It probably knows who else is in this room because the other people who are in that meeting request are in the calendar. So in the future, we should be able to show up to a meeting room and not have to worry about understanding who's there or understanding have we got the right information, the right presentations. The room, in a way, should be able to do that on our behalf. Recognize who's in the room, recognize who's speaking in the room, recognize different languages in the room and be able to translate those languages automatically. On our behalf. We're now at the point that technology can start to do those things. And at Microsoft, we talk about it as technology becoming more like us, more human, which on the one hand sounds a little bit scary of, wow, technology is now starting to become more human. But it's starting to become more human in a good way, that, it, like I say, it can recognize us, it can understand us, it can do things on our behalf. So what I thought I'd do is just give you a few examples, a couple of videos, and then I'll show you some demos later. But a couple of things that hopefully will bring this to life a little bit. So there's going to be a real sort of mix of videos here. The first one I want to show you, and I'll just talk over this a little bit, but basically what you're seeing here is this is the work that goes on. This is what Kinect sees. So Kinect has a set of technology that does skeletal tracking. It will track 42 points on the human body. Not only that, though, much more important in this demonstration than the skeletal tracking is the facial tracking. So Kinect can sense down to a couple of centimeters. So literally, when the lady raises our eyebrow here, we can then map that onto an avatar where it raises an eyebrow on the avatar or it smiles. So this is really just to make the point around technology is now at the point where it can start to recognize us. It can start to create more human. This is quite scary, so I'm not going to leave this on too long. But technology now has vision capability, not just the ability to take a photo, but more importantly, the ability to recognize us. And some of you, if you have Kinect, you may recognize this next video. This is a product that launched with Kinect called Kinectimals. I'll just turn the volume down a little. And again, this is not really to give you a product pitch around Kinectimals, but this is what happens when you start to remove the barriers, start to remove the learning curve for technology. Is that kids can literally walk up to a television and the controller no longer exists. You don't have the learning curve. You think back to the washing machine example. I've got the learning curve of trying to figure out, what does this dial mean? Where do I set it? How do I put it? What this technology starts to show is you can literally walk in front of a piece of technology. It recognizes you and it responds to you. It responds to your actions. You lie down on the floor. The cat in the video lies down on the floor. You wave at the thing. It waves back. We can start to build much more human interfaces based on the fact that technology can see and recognize us. The next video I want to show you, in the room next door you may have seen Surface, the original version of Surface. About 3 or 4 weeks ago we announced the next version of Surface at CES. So I'm just going to jump forward into this video. The thing I want to show you here, let me just get to the right point. So you can see that Surface has changed. Hopefully you can just about see the video. Surface has changed and then it's now 4 inches thick. It's not 20 inches thick. So that changes what we can do with Surface, the types of interfaces we can create. We can start to hang this thing on the wall as well as sit it down on a table. The much more interesting thing about this is Surface in the past, it used to use infrared cameras to project the movements. The device you see next door has 5 cameras shining infrared beams up onto a surface, and when you touch the surface, it can recognize what you've touched. This is a completely different technology. So the technology behind this is something we call Pixel Sense. And what we've done is worked with Samsung. You'll see when the guy puts a piece of paper down, this is a screen of what the tabletop sees. So literally the tabletop can now see. It has vision. Real good, high quality, high resolution vision. The way it does that is if you were to take a look at this screen, you all probably know about LCD technology. It's made up of pixels. Every single pixel in this screen not only can project, but is a camera as well. So literally you now have a 42-inch screen that is both a 42-inch LCD screen, but a 42-inch huge camera that you can start to put things down on, and it can recognize objects, it can interact with objects. I think the potential for this, these are some of the examples of companies who are already using it, folks like Red Bull and a couple of banks in different places. But really a great example of how, again, we're starting to move beyond the point of touch and gesture and speech, which are all important, but when technology can start to kind of see and recognize objects and recognize people, it changes what you can do with interfaces. A couple of other quick things to show you. So this is another example of Kinect, where we've taken our speech technology. So Microsoft has a set of... So another very simple example, we have a speech technology inside of Microsoft that is not just in Xbox, it's in Windows Phone. It's in 3 million Ford cars now that ship into the US. So literally I can sit in front of my Xbox and I can talk at the system. I can say Xbox play, Xbox pause, Xbox fast forward. And again, it's very early days. Ideally I want to be able to walk into the room and say, Xbox, show me the most interesting thing that's on television right now that I'll be interested in. We're not very far away from being able to do that, because it will recognize my voice, and when it will also begin to recognize when I say, show me the most interesting programs that I'll be interested in. The technology knows that. If you think about your television, it's been sat watching you for the last 20 years, really. It knows what you're interested in. In kind of a curious way, your television knows. You come into the room, you change channels, and you pick the stuff you're interested in. Or you use your PVR to record the stuff you're interested in. But it's you having to do all of the work. Very soon we'll be at the point where we walk in and my remote control should have one button, really. In fact, I won't need a remote control because it will recognize my face. But if it did have one button, it would say Steve TV. And when my wife walked in, it would say Anna TV. Because it knows who I am, it knows the stuff I'm interested in, and it should be able to present that to me without me having to jump through the barriers of surfing through 500 different channels. It should be able to do that by recognizing my face, by recognizing my voice, by recognizing what time of day it is. If I walk into the room in the morning, I'm much more likely to be interested in what's the technology news or what's the news overnight from the US. If I walk in the evening, I'm much more likely to be interested in what's the latest Champions League game that's on at the moment that I would be interested in because it knows who my favorite teams are. That's the point we're starting to reach, where technology starts to recognize and understand us a great deal more. 2 final examples I'll give you, and these are examples of explorations that we're making in technology around where can interfaces go, where can these more natural interfaces go. The first one I'm going to show you is something called Skinput, and I'll jump forward a little bit in this video. Hopefully you guys can see this. So this kind of looks a bit freaky. I'm going to turn it down a bit and explain what's going on. But basically, this guy's using his arm as an input mechanism. So what we've found out through our research is when you tap your arm, depending on where you tap on your arm, that sends a different electrical pulse signal. So literally, you can, if you put a sensor on your arm, so you'll see this now, the guy puts a sensor on his arm, And then when he taps on different points in his wrist, that creates a completely different acoustic output. So depending on where he taps, you get a different acoustic output. So that means the sensor can recognize exactly where you're tapping at some point in time on your arm. And most people look at this and go, yeah, that's crazy. Where's that going to be used? So I'll give you a couple of examples you'll see in the video here in a second. First example is you're jogging down the street. You've got your MP3 player on the side of your arm, but you want to change tracks or you want to take a telephone call. So typically what you have to do now is you stop and you take the thing off and you take the telephone call or you click like this and change tracks. Using this technology, you'd simply be able to move your fingers literally like this because it can tell that doing this, tapping these two fingers together, is different than tapping these, and it's different than tapping these. So you can start to control interfaces in a completely different way. The guy who invented this, his example was his wife, he and his wife go to pottery class. So he gets a phone call in the middle of his pottery class. But his hands are full of pottery and clay and wet and messy. But his phone is in his pocket, but he wants to answer the phone. Using this technology, he could do it. Really, he can just tap his fingers together and he's answered the phone. The other example is I recently started learning how to snowboard. And for anybody who, probably many of you either ski or snowboard in this region, and you put all your gear on and, you know, if you're, as I recognized last week, if you're quite advanced, then you come down the hill with your music system on. So the same kind of thing. I don't want to have to take off, stop and undo my jacket to change the music track or answer the phone. In those types of environments where you've got lots of material or clothes on, just the ability to be able to have very natural interactions just using either your body or fingers or movement or gestures. Another example in a completely different field, one of the areas where we're starting to see people think about using Kinect is in operating theatres, which are obviously a very kind of sanitized environment. Everybody kind of, gets into their scrubbed gear. And there's now surgeons who they want to be able to refer to surgical information on a screen while they're performing an operation. And in the past, what they had to do was walk out of the operating theater, take the gear off, interact with the screen, take a look at the images, if it was brain surgery or some kind of open heart surgery, look at the images on a PC, and then get scrubbed back up and walk back into the operating theater. They're now using a version of a Kinect sensor to just have those images on a screen in the operating theater and just be able to use gestures or speech to be able to take a look at those images. So as you start to think about the not just the technology, but the environment where you'd want to use the technology, some of these kind of interface mechanisms start to become more interesting. So just to go back to the slides, and then I'll show you a couple of other demos. The other thing that's starting to really make these more natural interfaces possible is the amount of data we have. I talked a little earlier about sensors, the amount of sensors in our world. In your car right now, if you've got a reasonably modern car, you've probably got somewhere in the region of 50 computers in that car. If we think about a computer as being some kind of computerized device, whether it's a chip or whether it's a sensor of some type, you probably have 50 computers in your car. Actually, if you go and take a look at your house and think about your house, you've probably got a couple of hundred computers in your house, in your fridge, in your washing machine, in your kettle, in your cooker, in your heating system, in your lighting system. Increasingly, these things are starting to become connected to the internet. And there's this phrase that I'm sure you've heard, the internet of things, where we're starting to get more and more objects. And an object might be something as simple as a car or a traffic light or a GPS system or a heating system or a lighting system or an accelerometer. Millions and millions of sensors in our world are now giving us increasingly more data. And then you ally that to the data that we have of your travels on the web. So if you think about your, where you go on the web, what you try and do, the search queries you perform, your kind of your search or your browser kind of history, the things that you've got stored on your PC, all of that can be indexed. You think about simple things like digital photographs, a huge amount of digital information. And we're starting to be able to use all of that information to make predictions about what it might be that you're interested in. So when you go, and I'll show you in a moment, when you go and use things like Bing, it's starting to make intelligent guesses about what is it that you might be interested in. If you're performing a query for a place, we think it's likely that you probably want to travel to that place. So instead of giving you 100 blue links that say, here's all a bunch of links about Belgium or Ghent, then actually what we're going to show you is, here's the quickest route to Ghent, or here's what the traffic is on the way there at the moment. That's probably what you're interested in, because we also know exactly where you are right now. because obviously location is a big piece of sensing information. So there's a huge amount of data that increasingly is going to be used and aggregated and allow us to create these more natural user interfaces. So I'll give you a few examples of that. So the first example is, as I mentioned, from Bing. So just a very simple search. I'm going to do a search for, in this case, Denver. So what Bing now does is instead of giving me the usual as you would expect, here's a bunch of links related to Denver, it starts to say, well, we think you're probably interested in going to Denver. So we're going to present you with some stuff right at the top. Maps. What's the current weather? What are the attractions, restaurant, places you're likely to go? And then we've got over here, this is a very interesting piece of information. So if I click on flight deals, this is where we're really starting to use data and think about how can we intelligently use data to provide better services, more natural user interfaces to people. So imagine we were about to book a flight to Denver. Typically the way you do that on the web is you go through, well, typically the way I do it is I go and view 3 or 4 different websites and you do price matching and you try to figure out, is it cheaper to fly on Thursday or Monday? Which airline is it cheaper to fly with? Which airport should I go into? This is a technology that we call Faircast. And what it does is it takes the historical data of about the last year or so of flight information from where we currently are, which for me is Seattle, to where we're trying to go to, Denver. And then it gives us a prediction plot. And independent studies have shown this is 90% accurate. It's basically saying that don't book on this date or tomorrow because it's going to be more expensive than if you book over here. So it immediately, instead of you having to go out to these 3 or 4 different websites and do all of that price comparison, it's using a huge amount of historical data to make predictions about here's what we think the optimal moment to book your flight is. And you can start to use that same technology in lots of different ways, and I'll give you another example in a second. Another very, very simple example from Bing. And this is not to say that, you know, Bing has a long way to go, we know that for sure, but we're trying to attack the search interface, or the search solution in a much different way than I think has been done before. Really simple example. I'm going to do a search for BMI. Because I want to know about body mass index. Clearly anybody who took a more, you know, studied look at me would realize that this is something I have to care about. So I could, you know, go and find out what does body mass index, what's it all about. I could read the Wikipedia entry. But it gives me just a very simple interface to say, okay, what's your height? And I pick my height, which I won't say I'm 6'2" because I'm not, I'm 5'11". I'm not going to show you my weight because it's far too embarrassing. And over here, it then gives me a very quick result that says, is your BMI good or is it bad? And again, it's a very simple example of how we're starting to use predictions around, here's what we think you're probably looking for. Let's try and make it easier for you. Let's try and lower the barriers. And you go back to the washing machine example, and it's the same thing. I don't want 500 dials, 500 options. I just want a very simple, easy-to-use result. And we start to have the intelligence to provide those results to people through technology like this. So another demo I'd like to give you is, this is a technology that's in beta at the moment. You can go and play around with this. It's at projectemporia.com. And what this system does, it's a personalized news engine. So you log in, you can use Facebook or Windows Live or Twitter to log into Project Emporia, and then you can pick a set of topics. In this case, I pick sport. And what happens is, as I read each story, so in this case, I'm going to go down and read this particular story. Sorry, I'm just going to jump back. Okay, it's not quite giving me what I wanted it to do. But basically what happens through the system is, a little bit like Facebook, you get to vote on the story, each of the stories it presents to you. So you say, well, I'm interested in this story, but I'm not interested in that story. So as I click down into each story, what it should be giving me, it doesn't appear to be at the moment, is it would give me a vote up and a vote down button. And each time I vote a story up, it keeps history that says, Steve's interested in this type of story, but he's not interested in this type of story. And the next time I come in, it gives me a more accurate set of news for me. And each time I come in, the news gets more and more and more accurate. Because it begins to learn over time. It uses a technology called machine learning that we've spent a lot of time and effort on in Microsoft Research to start to analyze. When you vote up, it learns what you're interested in. When you vote down, it learns what you're not interested in. You take that back to the television example. Imagine if I had that on my television, that I could vote up and vote down TV programs, and that would influence what I saw the next time I turned my television on. Even better, imagine if I could vote up or vote down advertisements on television. That would be brilliant. Because there are some adverts that I really, really like on television. If you go to the US, you'll find out pretty quickly there are lots of adverts that you really, really don't like on television. All of these kind of ambulance chasing adverts about, have you taken a particular drug? Because that drug is really bad and we can help you claim $1 million back from the company. Anyway, I won't bore you with US adverts. But the benefit here for companies like advertisers is people think that we're trying to get rid of adverts on television. What this type of technology allows us to do is get much more specific and targeted around things like adverts on television, because people can start to vote with their feet, vote with their button, and you can start to present much more contextual information back to people. A couple of other quick demonstrations I wanted to give you is photo gallery. Some of you may have seen this technology. I talked about facial recognition earlier on, and we have facial recognition built into Kinect. We also have facial recognition built into free tools like Windows Live Photo Gallery. So what I can do with a technology like this is I'm going to just go and do a batch people tag. And so what happens here is I click, these are all photos of my daughter, and I've already tagged images of my daughter. So I tagged one image last month of my daughter. And now every time I load up the system, this application will say, ah, we've found 500 new photos, and we've used facial recognition, and we think all of these other photos are photos of your daughter as well. And I can scroll down and I can quickly see, yeah, they are actually all of my daughter, and I can click confirm. And it will then go away and use that information to say, we now have 355 more photos of your daughter. We're going to use that as an algorithm to help us process and see, do we have more photos of your daughter? So it learns over time by tagging more and more information. So now I'm at the point, so then it's come back and said, oh, we found 8 others based on what you just told us. We think all of these photos are photos of your daughter. And click on confirm, and it will keep iterating through until it can't find any more photos. But what that allows me to do is imagine the scenario now is when my family come and visit in Seattle. The normal scenario is, oh, you want to show them some photos. You fire up the PC or the television. You get the thing all hooked up, and then you say, oh, I need to open up 5 different galleries or 5 different folders to show you all the photos. Now, or pretty soon, I should be able to just walk into the room and say, show me all the photos of Alberta. In fact, show me all the photos that were taken in the last 3 days. Or show me all the photos where she's in a photograph with her mother. Or show me all the photos when she's in a photograph with a group of people. And we've got the ability to do that right now. It's not there quite, but the ability to piece all of that together. We've got the facial recognition technology. We've got the speech recognition technology. We can start to build these much more natural user interfaces. It looks like I'm about to run out of battery. So let's just fix that. Excuse me one second, is that? No. Just worried about which one I'm going to unplug. Okay, great. Sorry about that. First rule of demo is always check your PCs plugged in. Okay, final one I'm going to show you is a quick video, and then we'll wrap up and take some questions. So this is another technology that we've got coming out of Microsoft Research. And you're probably, I'm sure, all familiar with Google Street Maps or maybe even Bing Street Maps. We're taking a new approach to how do we do street-side viewing. So this is all very familiar. The way that you do street-side viewing at the moment is that you take photographs from multiple different places around a 360 viewpoint, and then you can, in this case, what they're trying to do is look further down the street, and as you zoom down the street, obviously the image is not quite so good, so you have to step down the street. But what you don't get through this view is a way to really kind of view the street in a kind of long, normal, natural view. So what we've done is taken the technology and turned this into more of a panoramic view of the street. So you can literally strafe along the street and view it as if it was just one single block, which when you think about it, if you're trying to find a place in a city, it's a much kind of nicer way to go down the street. And in fact, a later version that we have of this, if I just skip back in the video for a second, in fact, I think they'll show it in this video, What we've also started to do is we have a technology that will then overlay each of the store names below these locations. You can literally walk along the street on the web as if you were kind of walking along the street in real life. So that technology is called Street Slide, and hopefully we should see that come into being in the next couple of months. So what does this all mean, this stuff I've been talking about for the last 20, 25 minutes? I think it really means this: computers are becoming more like us, which, as I said earlier, is a slightly scary statement. But if you go back to my very simple example of the washing machine, wouldn't it be great to have much more natural interfaces where you don't have to learn about the technology, you don't have this barrier to technology? Connectimals, that video I showed you, is probably one of the best examples of where there literally is no barrier to technology. And it gets to this point, the technology starts to become invisible. Computers are embedded in so many parts of our lives now, we can start to tap into, connect up all of those computers. And computers, technology really starts to become invisible. We're also heading towards this, where technology starts to work on our behalf. Up until now, the history of computing, technology has always worked at our command. It's only ever done things when we've asked technology to do things for us. We're now at the point, because of a huge amount of data, because of research into areas like machine learning, that technology can really start to understand the context of what we're about to do. Oh, you've just entered a search for Denver. I think you're probably trying to book a flight to Denver. Let me see if I can help you with that. In many ways, some of you probably remember Clippy, Microsoft Office and Clippy. Clippy, in many ways, was kind of the early days of this. It was a really bad implementation of it. Really bad. But literally, that's where we're moving towards, where it's actually not saying, oh, it looks like you're trying to write a document. Let me help you write. No, I don't want your help to help me write a document. I want your help to find me the cheapest flight to Denver right now in 5 seconds. And we've moved on a lot. The technology's moved on a lot. But in many ways, you can see it back in those days of Clippy. And technology started to anticipate our needs, understanding what it is we're trying to do and trying to help us more quickly get there. So this is a quote from the famous Xerox PARC scientist, Alan Kay. The best way to predict the future is to invent it. And that's what we're really trying to do at Microsoft. We spend a lot of our time doing. We spend about $9 and a bit billion a year on research and development. It's kind of a misunderstood number, that $9 and a bit billion. Only a very small fraction of that actually goes into research. Most of it goes into development of products like Bing and Xbox and Kinect and Windows and all of the products that you see on the marketplace now. But we do take a chunk of that money and put it into Microsoft's research activities. So I want to finish by showing you a video that I expect some of you may have seen, but I think it's worth showing again, and I'll explain why when the video finishes. But I hope you'll enjoy this. So some of you, I expect, may have seen that video before. If you haven't, if you want to re-see it or show it to people, it's publicly available. It's at officelabs.com. But the reason I wanted to show you the video is a couple of things. The video was actually done 2 years ago at Microsoft, and it was a projection of where do we think technology is going to be in 2019. So on the one hand, I kind of feel bad that I'm showing you a two-year-old video, but the reason I wanted to show you it is we're already starting to deliver on some of those promises. Some of the things that you see in that video will be enabled by the Kinect technology. Every single thing you see in that video is in Microsoft's labs right now. I've seen every single one of those things. The boarding card that you slide your finger on, the paper that looks like a digital piece of paper, the screen at the start with the two kids is a screen that's basically they're doing telepresence video conferencing on opposite sides of the world that does real-time translation of languages. Every single one of those things is in Microsoft's labs right now. That's the kind of the future that we're trying to build. There's a couple of other things you'll probably take away from the video. It would appear in the future that everybody flies business class. I can't promise that at all. But what we can promise is that's the kind of technology that we're trying to build and build these kind of more natural user interfaces. So with that, I'm finished with the presentation. I think we've probably got some time for a few questions if people have any. But hopefully you found that useful, and happy to take any questions that you might have based on that. Or not, if you don't have any questions. What do people think? Has people seen the video before? Show of hands if you've seen the video. Oh, about half folks. Any questions? Yeah, so we announced actually on Monday this week that there's going to be an SDK for Kinect. So something I should show you. If you're interested in this type of stuff, I should have promoted this at the start, but this is the website that I edit on a daily basis. So the screen technology at the start of that video where the two kids were talking, that's actually pretty difficult stuff to do, because what you have, if for any of you who, and I'm sure you all have, used a normal video conferencing system, it's quite an unnatural experience, because typically the camera that you're talking to is either up here or down here, and the person that you want to talk to is typically right in front of you. So it's actually not a very natural experience. That technology you saw in the video was two people having a conference talking through a semi-transparent piece of glass face to face. And the way it's done is we have a piece of technology at Microsoft called the Wedge. And it's basically it's an OLED screen that's a transparent screen that you can shine an image through the bottom of the screen, and it uses prisms to bounce the light. So you shine an image at the bottom of a piece of glass, and it comes out as an image on a flat piece of glass. And then that piece of glass is transparent, so it means, or semi-transparent, but it also means you can put a camera behind the piece of glass. And the effect that you then end up with is a very thin screen that you can look directly into, and the camera's looking directly at you, and you have the person on the other end doing the exact same thing. And what you ultimately then end up with is this very real, natural face-to-face conversation. So anyway, there'll be a video that goes up on this site this afternoon that shows that exact technology in our laboratories. But to answer your question, we announced the SDK. It's coming out in spring. So basically, anybody will be able to download it. It's going to be a free SDK. And people can start building cool stuff on top of Kinect, which some people are already doing through a so-called hacked version. But this is going to be a version that's got more support in and allows you to access some more of the system's internals of Kinect. But we've been amazed by some of the things we've been seeing people do with Kinect. And to give you a sense of that technology, I spoke with the people who, there's a couple of stories I can tell you here. One is the guy who invented Kinect is a guy called Alex Kipman at Microsoft. And he's this just super smart, brainy guy. And I met with Alex a few times, and he's told me the whole kind of story of how Kinect came about. And it's a fascinating story, where basically the company said, we 2 years ago we had a lot of competition from the Wii controller, which is, a great product. And our initial response was, let's go and create our version of the Wii controller. And then Alex and his team said, no, let's try and create something that nobody's ever done before. And lots of people at Microsoft said, this is impossible. There's no way you can do this real-time 3D sensing of a body at 30 frames per second. It's technically impossible. But it turns out the work that we've been doing over the last 10 years around Microsoft Research Labs makes that possible, and we delivered Kinect in just under 3 years, which is fairly impressive for a product of that level of capability. The reason is it's because for 10 years we've been researching facial recognition, skeletal tracking, artificial intelligence, neural networks. All of those technologies are built into this thing. And then it ships for the sensor itself for $150. You could have bought this technology a year ago, 2 years ago, but it would have cost you $40,000. So the other kind of real great story around Connect for me is we've taken this thing that used to cost $40,000, turned it into this $150 thing, and what we've seen is the community has just embraced it and said, this thing is incredible. For $150, we can now build things that we can never build before. And you guys have probably seen as many of the videos as I have. Some of the more impressive ones is somebody's taken two Kinect cameras and figured out a way to basically make you invisible. It's like the Harry Potter invisibility cloak. So it takes an image of you and then projects another image back and makes you invisible. It's fairly impressive. And then another one I've seen is somebody has attached a Kinect to a quadriceptor, which is one of these sort of helicopters that you can fly that has four rotors on, a model helicopter. But they've attached a Kinect to this helicopter. So now the helicopter, this model helicopter, can fly autonomously around a space. So it would fly around this room, and then it would recognize it's about to hit a wall because it's got a depth sensing camera built in. It would recognize the wall and say, oh, I don't want to go that way, and it would turn around and fly off in another direction. So that was the longest answer to a question I've ever given in my life. But the answer is yes, we do have an SDK for Kinect. If you want to hear more about this kind of stuff, then I'd encourage you to go and take a look at its website. I just have the best job in the company for me. I get to go around the company every day talking to the people who are building this stuff and getting to tell their story through this website and through doing things like this. So I love what I do. Any other questions? It's non-commercial use. So, yeah. So it's basically, it's targeted at sort of academics and enthusiasts, people who want to go and play around with it. We will, at some point in the future, you know, we've not made any commitments around a commercial SDK, but, you know, it's very clear that there are significant commercial opportunities beyond gaming than just what we're currently seeing with Kinect. But the reality for us is I think we've been slightly surprised by the amount of enthusiasm beyond gaming. But we, you know, the product is about 70 days old. We've sold 8 million versions of Kinect in 70 days. And at the moment, we are just entirely focused on making this thing the best gaming experience we can. Further down the line, I'm sure we'll see a lot more applications of it. No, it's basically the same, well, broadly the same technology. That the speech engine in Windows 7 is not that many people use it in my experience, and it's not that well understood. But there's some very clever technology in that version of the speech engine because, the speech side, actually more on the handwriting side. I'll come back to the handwriting. But we have a group at Microsoft. We acquired a company a few years ago called Tell Me. And we combine them with some of the speech teams, speech technology we already had at Microsoft. And now speech is becoming, rather than an individual product, it's becoming this technology that we're starting to embed in more and more of our products. So it's in Windows 7, a version of the technology. It's in Windows Phone, a version of the technology. So when you hit search in Bing on Windows Phone, there's a little microphone icon. I'm not sure it's available outside the US at the moment, actually. But you can hit a little microphone icon inside of Bing on Windows Phone, and it will do voice-based search. And at the moment, we're seeing about 20% of the searches that take place on a phone are voice-based searches. The same technology is in Ford's cars, it's in some Fiat cars, it's in some Kia cars. And it's also inside of Xbox. So when you control, increasingly as you control Xbox, it's the same technology. So we're starting to put it in lots of places. Just on Windows 7, the handwriting technology is very interesting in Windows 7 because when you do handwriting, what it actually does is it's learning. Every time you write something, it's learning how you write it and how it's different from me. So if I wrote the word, Microsoft, and you wrote it, we'd write it probably in slightly different ways. So I would create my letter I maybe slightly differently to you. And the technology that's built in there is this machine learning technology, and it will recognize next time how to better recognize your version of the letter I versus my version. Um, I think so. I don't know. We should check on that and get back to you. I think there's a speech SDK, but I don't know for sure. These guys probably know better than I do. Any other questions? The video I showed with the skimpud. No, it's not available. It's there's been quite a bit of research around it. We're playing around with it. We're not quite sure where it's going to be used. I hope we're not about to launch this big wristband thing. But what I should have explained is there were two pieces to that technology. There was the wristband, but it also made use of a Pico projector. So that's how you got the interface on the arm. But there's a longer version of that video, and there's some very smart things you can do with it as well. So you can recognize distance from the arm as well. So you can have an interface that's controlled as well as being a tap-based interface. You can have an interface where you can move your arm or move your hand up and down. It will recognize distance. In fact, there was one other video I just realized as I was playing the video I forgot to show you earlier. So I wanted to just show you this video as well, which is called LightSpace, which is an amazing technology. Again, still in the labs, but this is one that's... I got to see this firsthand a few weeks ago myself, so I'm just going to skip forward a little bit in the video. So basically, this technology, what you'll see in a second, this is two guys, Andy and Benko, and they've got up here, they've got a set of projectors, just standard projectors, but they've also got two or three Kinect depth sensing cameras. And then down here, they've just got a normal kind of IKEA table. They're projecting stuff onto the table using a normal projector. But then as they touch things on the table, they're using the Kinect camera to recognize where the person's hand is and move things around. So that's all well and good. But the really cool thing you'll see in a second is they can basically move objects in space. So the way this works is imagine this is the table, and it has this, it's projecting something onto the table. I can touch the object on the table, and then I would touch this screen, and it would literally fly from here onto the screen. You'll see it do it in a second. Or you can even scoop things off the table into your hand, and they appear then as a red dot in my hand. And I could hand it to Arno here, and he would go and touch the wall over there, and the image would appear on the wall. So hopefully you've been able to see it while I've been talking, but basically you've got this ability to move objects in physical space. So literally you touch something on a table, touch the wall, and it's kind of like electricity. The object that you've touched on the table is being transmitted through you and appears immediately on the screen. So again, some of that was, if you think back to that envisioning video, there were some examples of that exact technology being used in that video. So he's now got this thing that he's basically got an object that was on the table, is now in his hand. He's going to pass it to Benko. He's going to drop it onto a piece of paper, and hopefully in a second one of them will touch the screen, and that object that was previously on this table is going to appear up on that screen. Poosh. And it's hard to really grasp it in the video, but the first time I saw this, I was blown away. It's just unbelievable technology. But it's not, I'm about to say it's not that difficult. It's clearly very difficult because these guys have got PhDs and I haven't. But really what they're using is this, again, this $150 Kinect camera that can recognize movement and can recognize depth and can recognize objects. And using that, just connected to a normal projector. On Monday afternoon, we showed a slightly more advanced version of this, the version they had, how can I explain this? Basically, you'd show up at a desk with an object. So imagine I have this bottle, and I put it down on the desk. And as soon as I put it down, they'd advanced it slightly because instead of having a normal projector, they now had a 3D projector. So you put the object down, the Kinect sensor scans the 3D object and immediately projects an exact replica of the 3D object onto the table. So you can now take this object away and you still have the 3D representation of the object. So you think about that in things like architecture or building. You can start to create kind of literally 3D models of your desk that you can then share remotely with other people. And they can control those virtual 3D objects on your desk. It's all a little bit mind-blowing to take it all in and think about where is it going to be used, but this stuff is now moving so quickly, a lot of it because of the technology we've released inside of Kinect. So I think we're almost done on time. I hope you found that useful and interesting, and hopefully you saw some things and you heard some things that you haven't heard before. Some of it I'm sure you've seen before. I hope it was of some use and interest to you. So I appreciate your time and your questions, and I hope you have a great rest of the day. So thank you.